I'd like to call this public meeting of the Oregon Board of Forestry to order. Perform the roll call. Nils Christofferson.
Here.
Tom Insko.
Here.
Cindy Deacon Williams is unable to be here today. Mike Rose.
Here.
And I'm Tom Imason, so we do have a quorum today. I just want to mention for everybody that this meeting will, and future meetings as well, will be live streamed and we'll have a video recording of it. I also want to note that pursuant to ORS 192.660.2H, the board will meet in closed executive session starting at 11:45 this morning. The purpose of that session will be to confer with legal counsel regarding the board's rights and duties related to current litigation or litigation likely to be filed. Representatives of the news media and designated staff shall be allowed to attend the executive session. All other members of the public are not allowed to join. We will adjourn that meeting directly after the executive session is done. I also want to indicate that, as we mentioned, that in order to ensure that the board has the opportunity to conduct all of the business on the agenda for its meetings, public comment for agenda topics will be limited to no more than 30 minutes. A sign-up sheet is available for public comment on a first-come, first-served basis. As always, submission of written comments ahead of board meetings is encouraged. For the State Forest FMP topic, we are trying a new approach to improve the substance and quality of public input. We have scheduled 2 15-minute blocks of invited testimony from the two stakeholder groups who have regularly participated in the FM topic. I don't want to imply by that we haven't had quality input, but this enables folks to kind of get organized ahead of time as to how they'd like to use that time. To ensure that the general public has a fair opportunity to speak, we have requested that anyone participated in invited comment refrain from using the public comment time as well. So we first have item A, which is the consent agenda. Is there a motion for approval of consent items A through D?
So moved.
Second. Moved and seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. The consent agenda is adopted and approved. And we'll now move to the State Forester for his comments.
Thanks. Good morning. I'm going to provide some context on several topics on today's agenda: the fire season, our agency initiative, and State Forest. And then I will close with an update on leadership and staff changes. At the June board meeting, I indicated that the fire season was starting earlier and that we were expecting a higher than average fire severity. And I do hate it when we get correct on these forecasts. So we had our first incident management team deployment on the Graham fire on June 22nd, and our second incident management team deployment on the Lobster Creek fire on July 2nd. Both these deployments were very successful at holding the fires at 2175 and 397 acres respectively. We went into unified command with CAL FIRE on the Klamathon fire on July 6th. And did a great job minimizing acres burn on the BLM as it entered into Oregon. On Sunday, July 15, we had 1,000-plus lightning strikes in southern Oregon and central Oregon, resulting in 100 fires on our southwest district, and just as many or more on Forest Service lands in southern Oregon. We deployed our third team to the Gardner Complex on July 17th, and they're still working that fire. Oregon had 5 more interagency team deployments shortly thereafter, 2 on the Rogue Siskiyou, 2 on the Umpqua, and 1 on Crater Lake. Last June, I also described how each district, area, and state office has a drawdown plan that ensures we're managing appropriately to meet our mission. Well, we're at drawdown, and we're having to reassess to ensure that we're adequately supporting our teams. As always, our number one priority is initial attack at the district level, along with managing and mitigating risk in our other business. This fire season is looking a lot like a combination of 2013 with multiple large fires on the landscape in southern Oregon, one of those being the Gardner Complex for ODF, and 2017 with multiple fires on other jurisdictions that are likely will be threatening ODF-protected lands. We are currently reassessing our drawdown plans and affirming or revising these plans to assure we're meeting initial attack and extended attack demands at the local level and providing large fire support in the most efficient and effective way possible. At the same time, we are at bare bones administering the Forest Practice Act and state forest operations. With this or further drawdown, there are risks and maybe consequences to Oregon's natural resources and future impacts on revenues flowing from state forest. All this combined puts tremendous tension on us to meet our fire mission. Put bluntly, we don't have the people we had a decade ago, and that means not as many people to go around. The agency's strategic initiative intends to address this lack of capacity, which again is challenging us now 2 to 3 weeks earlier than last fire season. Today, you will have a decision point regarding the approval of our agency request budget, which includes our agency and initiative policy option request. As I said, we're already in the midst of another severe fire season that's challenging our ability to meet the multifaceted mission of serving Oregons by protecting, managing, and promoting stewardship of our forests to enhance environmental, economic, and community sustainability. Our agency requires a capacity in this request to provide the services Oregonians expect. It will take years to get personnel qualified to operate at the professional level we need and expect from our employees in the fire environment we work in today. As an executive team, we believe that protecting Oregon from wildfire begins well before fire season and includes active forest management to produce wood for local mills, reduce fuels, and increase resiliency of our forest to wildfire when it does occur. It also includes prevention education within the wildland-urban interface to create resilient fire and smoke-adapted communities. And finally, protecting Oregon also means providing safe and effective wildfire response. This policy option package doesn't belong to any particular division or program. We must continue to have the capacity agency-wide to promote active management both on our public and private forests to get ahead of wildfire and reduce its occurrence and impacts and maintain this capacity to serve Oregon's complete and coordinated fire protection system. This conclusion is the core of why we put together a comprehensive agency-wide policy option request. And you will hear more a fire update today from Ron Graham, and you'll hear about the our agency budget later in the session. Shifting gears to state forest management, the state forest management plan topic, I'll remind you that we've been working on multiple fronts to create a viable organization and plan for managing Oregon's state forest. When the board restarted the effort in April 2017, I noted that revising the FMP alone will not solve our financial viability challenge. We are also examining new business models to provide alternate funding for the provision of public benefits, particularly recreation, education, and interpretation. I'll remind you, we spend approximately $3 million on recreation, education, and interpretation, and another $2 million a year on surveys alone for threatened and endangered species. We have also started improving our business practices, including creating a blueprint for a future organizational structure to address the gap between projected revenues and operating costs. So today I'm going to talk about the other two efforts, not the FMP. And this morning we'll hear from the Tillamook Forest Heritage Trust, which serves as a nonprofit supporting organization to the agency in the State Forest Division. The division and trust are working to expand the trust ability to support programs on state forests, to bring in new partners and revenue streams to meet the challenge of providing the many public benefits associated with recreation, education, and interpretation. Such an expanded partnership between the division and the trust holds promise for developing new models for funding management of these public benefits, one that relies on a private-public partnership. We have not had the same success with creating public-private partnerships for ecosystem services, including wildlife and aquatic habitat. Turning to improve business practices, we've embarked on multiple initiatives to identify ways to reduce costs and increase revenues. We have looked at ways to collaborate with other landowners, leverage resources with other divisions, improve marketing of our timber, and include a focus on revenue production, which was missing from the development of the current FMP. And as we reported in our annual reports, these efforts are paying off. In 2015, our net operating income, that's ODF revenue minus expense, was $800,000. In 2016, $1.8 million. In 2017, $1.5 million. We project our net income to be $4.5 million in 2018, and we have started prudent planning for additional investments in young stand management, thinning, and recreation. So I know, Tom, you had asked, you know, in these good timber markets, and we are being successful at building up the reserves. This approach has brought us time to complete an analysis of our State Forest Division workforce to meet modern demands of forest management while making sure the division is sustainable over the long term to implement all aspects of greatest permanent value. We call this initiative Workforce Futuring, and I've mentioned this initiative before very generally, but our first concern is to our employees, so I wouldn't speak specifically, but we've now rolled it out to all our employees so I can discuss it in more detail. Starting in February 2017, the team working on this worked for a year visiting with each employee at every district, South Forest Camp, Tillamook Forest Center, and Salem. Employees' ideas and feedback defined the core business needed to meet GPV and identified new workflows and business processes to increase efficiency. This work became the underpinnings of a blueprint, a strategic vision that outlines new business practices and the organizational structure to support it. And to be clear, the business practices drove the organizational structure. The plan does represent significant change. We realize that there are no aspects of our core business that can simply be dropped, and we need all the employees we currently have. So the team focused on changing how we approach our business. The blueprint outlines best practices, makes best use of capacity across geographic divisions, and recognizes the value of our on-the-ground experts and communities across the state. To take advantage of economies of scale where it makes sense, some planning and contracting work will be centralized. These changes will centralize workflows, flatten the management structure, provide higher level technical positions, and distribute decision-making to lower levels. The new organizational structure will improve our business, our ability to complete core business without growing our workforces. These changes are needed to promote a more efficient, nimbler workforce that is better able to accomplish our core business. Some other key decisions, including a change in the culture to focus on division goal rather than district goals, and using flowing employees across division boundaries where we have a greater need in a given year. We've also decided to maintain local offices because of our partnership with counties and local communities. We rolled out to our blueprint to our staff in May, and I am really impressed with the way our state forest leadership and staff have suspended disbelief and embraced change. Nearly all employees' job duties will change as a result of the blueprint, and many existing positions, including positions of members of the design team, do not exist in the future workforce. Forest Grove District Forester Mike Caffaretta is leading the implementation team whose job is putting these concepts into practice over the next several years. I have full confidence in our employees as a can-do group of people, and we've asked our staff to keep giving us feedback so we get this right. Again, this is not a silver bullet, but rather a roadmap to incremental and sensible change that uses our talent and capacity and resources in the most effective manner. We expect the change will save an average of $1 million a year over the next 10 years. More importantly, it's an opportunity to create lasting change for our employees well-being, demonstrate our commitment to continuous improvement, and place us in the best possible position to serve Oregonians. About $1 million a year on average. It's going to take a while because we're going to phase it in. So moving to leadership and staff change. Change is constant, and ODF will see significant executive leadership change as we enter 2019. Tim Keith, our Emergency Fire Costs Committee Administrator, and Nancy Hurst, Deputy State Forest, will soon retire. I've been reflecting on the leadership and value and the service that Tim and Nancy have brought to ODF in the state of Oregon. I really appreciate the dedication to public service they have demonstrated over the years. They epitomize the meaning of being a public servant. I hope you will join me in recognizing their years of service by reaching out to them with your appreciation directly to them. As a consequence of these two retirements, I've taken some action to ensure stability through the fire season into the future. I am pleased to announce effectively January 1, 2019, Nancy Hirsch will work back with ODF to assume the Emergency Fire Costs Committee Administrative position formerly held by Tim. The two will overlap during the month of January to ensure a smooth transition. In the EFCC role, Tim provided a steady hand, continuing a long tradition of partnership with our forest landowners through the administration of our Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund. Nancy will no doubt carry the tradition forward with integrity and vision towards the future as she's done throughout her career. She's also an incident commander, as is Tim, so there's other benefits to keeping her around. Nancy will remain on as Deputy State Forest through December 2018, and as a primary focus, will work with me on the recruitment process for her replacement. If timing permits, there may be an opportunity to allow the month of December as an overlap between Nancy and the new Deputy State Forester. So I'm not sure Nancy's here. Tim is not. But please join me in recognizing Tim and Nancy for their decades of exceptional service and leadership. We have appreciated your dedication and have been fortunate to walk this road with you both. We offer heartfelt warm wishes for the future. In terms of staffing for the board, I'm pleased to welcome Hillary Olivos-Rood, our new Board of Forestry Administrator. Hillary comes to us from DAS Risk Management, where she served as a critical team component, coordinating projects and assisting in various technical support roles. Hillary brings a depth of work experience that we are excited to incorporate into our agency. I've also told her she can't work on fire, at least for a little while. I also would like to thank Megan Enley, who stepped up, as she always does, to serve as interim board support. She's been helping Hillary get up to speed. She's been supporting the executive team, and most recently, fire division operations over the weekend. She will also serve as backup to Hillary, so that'll be really nice. And as recognition, we have a card for her willingness to serve. And so, Megan, would you please stand up and be recognized? So, that's all.
Thanks, Peter. Any questions of Peter or comments from board members? I also do want to thank Tom Insko for continuing to serve with us. Hopefully we'll have a full complement of board members after legislative days in September. But it's really, we really appreciate your staying the course here with us. Next, we do have one person who signed up to comment in the public comment period, John Purcell.
Chairman Iverson, members of the board. My name is John Purcell. I'm here on behalf
of Mary Scurlock in the Oregon Stream Protection Coalition. I'm here to speak on the need for the board to come up with a policy to address Endangered Species Act liability for take of Oregon coasts and other listed salmonids caused by private forest management. The Oregon Stream Protection Coalition's 25 conservation and fishing industry member groups are united in support of stronger science-based forest practice standards that reliably meet water quality standards and protect aquatic life on Oregon's 10.6 million acres of private forest land. Recently, a citizen suit was filed under the Endangered Species Act by the Center for Biological Diversity and four other coalition members, naming department officials as defendants. The complaint describes harm to Oregon Coast coho and the quality of coho habitat from logging and road building on landslide-prone slopes and without adequate buffers. This harm is the result of logging-caused landslides, depletion of large wood sources, and in-stream sedimentation. Our purpose in testifying today is to make the point that the adverse timber harvest impacts on listed Oregon coast coho enumerated in the citizen suit are not limited to timber harvest on state lands, and in fact are more severe on the private lands, which encompass at least a third of habitat within this species range and have less protective default management practices. Significantly, NIMS findings in decision documents supporting the listing of Oregon coast coho show that clear-cutting trees on steep, unstable slopes and along debris flow paths, as well as road construction associated with log hauling in the Oregon Coast Range, adversely affecting coho, were not limited to state lands. NOAA and EPA findings that coastal water quality and beneficial uses such as salmon are not adequately protected by existing forestry measures specifically target stream buffers for smaller fish and non-fish-bearing streams, forest roads, and high-risk landslide areas. Furthermore, these impacts are not limited to Oregon coast coho and the coast range. Southern Oregon coastal coho and other Columbia River salmonids all have habitat on private forest lands and enjoy ESA protected status. Recovery plans for salmon, steelhead, and bull trout stocks specifically target improvement of conditions that are exacerbated by private lands logging. The risks posed by unstable slope logging are of particular concern because on both state and private lands, harvest is permitted to increase the risk of mass wasting unless public safety risks are identified. We note that Washington state forest practices and the collaborative negotiated stakeholder agreement underlying them state a clear objective that forest practices must avoid accelerating rates and magnitudes of mass wasting that could deliver sediment or debris to a public resource or could deliver sediment or debris in a manner that would threaten public safety. We propose that Oregon's approach should include a similar objective. We have attached several photographs to our comments that we're providing electronically as well that illustrate the difference between Oregon and Washington management of specific landforms prone to shallow rapid landslides, particularly steep headwalls and narrow intergorges. So in conclusion, the Oregon Stream Protection Coalition urges this board to establish a unified policy approach to stream protection that adequately limits the adverse impacts of both state and private logging on species listed under the Federal Endangered Species Act. We're encouraged by the board's recent movement toward the development of a habitat conservation plan on board-managed state forests, but a similarly proactive approach is also needed to address impacts to listed fish from timber harvest on private lands. Independent of whether a statewide forest practices aquatic habitat conservation plan is adopted as this board's public policy objective, we hope you will conduct a rigorous evaluation of the sufficiency of existing forest management for high-risk sites and debris torrent prone streams as they relate to the protection of ESA-listed aquatic species. Thank you very much.